Okay, I have a question for you, which is, if you got the microphone and you were in a room with players and owners and you had 30 seconds, what would you say? And we're talking about the baseball, the Major League Baseball lockout.
This is hard. This is hard. Like,
I wish you guys could have seen the look on his face. There was just such a defeat.
I had this Maddie and I talked about this yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She was like, I can't wait till we can go to a baseball game. And I was like, I don't know if we're going to get to this year.
Yeah.
And because I have my answer that is like behind the scenes, if you want me to be honest.
Yeah.
I would say this. But honestly, I don't know the inner workings of all of it. I don't know what they're upset about. I don't know. I don't really understand it.
Right.
I don't know why baseball gets locked out more than any other sport.
And sure.
I just don't understand it. I really don't.
Is that your 30 seconds?
No, I
guys,
mean, like,
I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
I have a thing really that if I were just being really blunt, I would say out loud, I would look them both in the face and say this one thing and just move on.
Yeah.
But out of fear of offending somebody, I think I'm going to keep it in my back pocket. That's how I feel. What would you say?
I think I would say, can y'all not? We just need something like this. We need, at the end of the day when we're doing dishes or after dinner or whatever, to just be able to turn on the TV and watch a guy throw a ball and another guy try to hit it. I'm a simple man. It's a simple ask. Hey, can one person throw a ball and another person try to hit it and then somebody else try to catch it?
Look, I've been a baseball guy my whole life, right? Yeah. Like but I feel it slipping away.
Mm.
And I'm someone who's a baseball guy. Now, those people who were like
your love for it or the existence of it?
I would say probably my love for it. And I'm coming off a World Series. Like,
wow.
It's not like, I think if you put a glove in my hand right now, I would light up like a child and just have a blast. But like, it feels okay.
Thinking of in the Lord of the Rings when Gandalf like makes Theoden like come back from the spell he was cast in, where he was like old and crotchety and covered in spider webs, and then he's like, "Your hands would remember their old strength if they held their sword again." It's like thinking about you all crotchety and crusted over.
The way I feel about baseball right now is like. It's like the movie Coco. Like, I don't remember everyone's name in there.
Miguel?
Is Miguel the
little kid?
No, who's the dude that...
Miguel's the little kid that looks exactly like Andrew Mishler.
Well, who's the one who is... He's trying to help with the picture.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Well, anyways, I feel like it's slowly... Baseball is slowly getting less and less visible right now.
Wow.
For people around the world, because it already kind of was that way. Like, baseball wasn't necessarily gaining. I could be wrong about this statistically. It wasn't really gaining in popularity.
Right.
It was holding steady and dropping a little bit. And now you're like, hey, we're not going to play right away. It's like, okay.
Oof, guys.
All right, guys. Do this to yourself. Go ahead.
Yeah, you already have to give away a bunch of stuff at the stadium every time you play this game. Which is not something that happens at like a football game. It's like, they're just like, hey, you're lucky to be here. Go find your seat.
I love baseball so much. I just want it to be playing again.
Yeah, just play.
And I want Freddie Freeman to play for the Braves.
I also just want to, now I want to, every time that you're like slogging and struggling and just like, whatever, I just want to throw a baseball glove at you and just watch like the sunshine and your hair, like the wind go through your hair, and for you to just like
my like bedhead right now with the cowlick on the right side of my head. This was my child woke up very early.
Oh gosh. One of the things that I was thinking about on Sunday was just like when your baby Jude and Jeff and Erica's baby Jay are just like sitting on the couch. It's like you're in Maddie's baby, just like having his little party and Jay Mason having his little party. And it's like, are they secretly like thinking about the fact that they're already best friends and that they're hanging out together every Sunday morning?
That's the good thing about boys, right? You just sit them next to each other and they become friends.
That's kind of how friendship works for boys.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
It's like whatever team I'm on, whoever has a locker near mine, that's kind of the rules of friendship. It's proximity.
Yeah. 100%. Like I think my best friend growing up, and like,
exactly,
we became best friends. And we were great best friends. Just like, it worked out.
You're there.
But he lived across the street from me.
Right.
You know? literally, I'll never forget. We were at the open house for the home that we were going to buy. Mm. And he, his brother, and their neighbors were playing baseball in the yard. And my mom was like, go play with those kids. I was 5.
Wow.
And then my parents left me.
They left you there?
Yeah, my dad drove by and waved. Mom drove by the other way and waved. And I was like, cool. And then an hour later, I went up to that house that I did not live in, walked in, and I was like, this isn't right.
Stop.
Yeah.
I've never heard this story.
Yeah.
Your parents left you as a five-year-old, but like, not like, oh, where did that kid with the big head go? Like, they actually left. They waved on the way out.
Yeah. No, it was like, I guess my dad thought my mom had me. My mom thought my dad had me.
Wow. Classic Jesus at the temple.
Hey, by the way, I just remembered I did do this scripture about 3 weeks ago. Okay. I remembered exactly what I said. So
before we started the show, Thomas was like, this thing I want to talk about, I'm afraid I talked about it just a couple weeks ago. I was like, nah, surely not.
I did.
So your parents left you at an open house as a 5-year-old, and then you walked back to the house and there was nobody in it.
There was the people who owned the house. So I literally armed robbery. Like, I opened the door and looked in. It's like, wow, there's the dog that doesn't live with us, and I hear people talking, so I'm gonna like tiptoe out of here and leave.
Oh my gosh.
And then Miss Lee Foxworth she called my parents for me.
That's fantastic. Welcome to Ancient and New. This is a podcast where we're gonna talk about some scriptures. And why don't I kick us off today, since you just did that like 3 weeks ago. I'm gonna be in the Gospel of John. And let's see. Come on. You know when you're flipping through your Bible and you're like, it just feels like you're getting nowhere, and it's like somehow you're turning like one page at a time. Right.
Habakkuk.
Yeah. But if you grab a bunch of pages, you're like, oh no, I went 17 books past where I meant to go.
Yeah.
I used to have a lot more accuracy on biblical page turning.
Well, it's because, you know.
Because of what?
You were in Bible drill.
Oh, I was in Bible drill. There was... For the uninitiated, the denomination of church where Thomas and I both grew up in the church had a competition team.
Yep.
It was who wins at Jesus.
Yeah, I think the term they would say is present arms. Is that right?
Yeah. No, present swords.
Present swords, okay.
Yeah, based on Ephesians chapter 6.
Did you have a scabbard for your Bible?
Oh my God.
Scabbers.
Would that just be like a purse? A merce?
A merce.
Oh gosh. Thank you for going straight to Harry Potter with that, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know what else to use that word for.
Oh, a scabbard. Okay, we are going to be talking from John chapter 20. Let's see. This is in verse 11. Now Mary, and this is Mary Magdalene. There's a lot of folks in the New Testament named Mary. This is Mary Magdalene. Let's see. Mary stood outside the tomb crying. No, that was Salome, wasn't it? I'm sorry, I'm getting confused. I'm thinking on my feet about something I wasn't ready to talk about.
But do we just need to scrap this whole episode?
Folks, we don't have an episode this week. We were sick. No, it's fine. Now, Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" Which is like, that's a bizarre question. obviously you had like apparently there's a thing back in John chapter 12 where Mary of Bethany, which is another Mary in the New Testament, Mary of Bethany, which is the sister of Lazarus and Martha, anoints Jesus's feet with this perfume because she heard him say and believed that after he died, he was going to be risen from the dead. Everybody else struggled with this concept and either didn't want to hear it or ignored it or whatever, or just couldn't wrap their mind around it. But the only thing Mary Magdalene is thinking is like, my Lord is dead. And now I go to visit the tomb and his body's gone. It's like, why wouldn't she be crying? But they are aware of a broader truth. So they're like, why are you crying? They have taken my Lord away, she said, and I don't know where they've put him. At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize it was Jesus. He asked her, woman, why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for? I love it when Jesus asks questions he already knows the answers to. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know exactly why he did that in every case, but sometimes I think it's because he wants the person to realize what state of mind they're in and what needs to change about it. And so he wants them to say it out loud. Thinking he was the gardener, she said, like the person who took care of this graveyard, sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've put him and I will get him. Jesus said to her, Mary. And she turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, Rabboni, which means teacher. Jesus said, don't hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. And Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, I have seen the Lord. And she told them that he had said these things to her. So there's a thing that John kind of buries in the narrative, which is when she cries out in Aramaic, Rabboni, which means teacher, the Jesus's next thing is, don't hold on to me. So John skips over the fact that she like sacked the quarterback, that she like, she's like an edge rusher and like, she like, boom, like bum rushed Jesus and wrapped herself around his feet, yeah. You know? And so he skips that part, but we get it intuitively because of what Jesus says. Okay. There's a lot that's going on here with Mary Magdalene and the risen Jesus. But the thing that was interesting to me the last time I read it recently was that Jesus is risen from the dead. It's the most incredible thing that's ever happened in the history of ever. Like Almighty God, who took on the form of a human being, let himself die. And then he is risen from the dead, never to die again. Walking around in a whole new phase of living, like the unkillable human body, still physically human. Like this is a thing that I can't even wrap my mind around it. Like, it's like there's the physical reality that we exist in, and somehow Jesus has entered into a new reality that's so real that he's like actually passing, like phasing through walls and stuff, like Vision from the Avengers. Like it's like, we can't even understand what's going on here. Like he is risen from the dead, like alive forevermore in a new and amazing kind of life. And she's just not experiencing it. And he's right there with her. Like the risen Jesus is right there beside her, ready to dry her tears, ready to give her joy, ready to give her hope. And she just doesn't even realize that it's true. And to the extent that she can't even recognize him. And I was thinking about the fact that this also happened in the village of Emmaus, or like on the way to Emmaus from Jerusalem, when Jesus meets those two people in like Luke chapter 24. And they don't recognize that it's Jesus. The risen Jesus is with you and he's talking to you and he's teaching you. And you don't even recognize he's risen from the dead. And then in John chapter 21, when Jesus is hanging out with the disciples on the beach, and it says that like none of them dared to ask who he was. Like they knew it was Jesus. And you're like they kind of knew, but they also kind of wanted to ask. And like, is it really you? It's so strange. Like, in other words, the risen Jesus is with people and they have a hard time understanding or experiencing he's there. And the reason that that is so interesting to me is that is my experience all day long. Like the risen Jesus is here with me.
Yeah.
And I just don't recognize it very much. And if I did, I would be like, I just think about like the untouchable joy that I would have. or yeah. the unshakable courage that I would have, or just like the things that bother me now, I would be like, please. Like when you're in ninth grade and you start playing football and you don't know how to work out, like the bar is heavy. Mm-hmm. And then when you're a senior and you've been playing for 4 years and you're repping out two plates, it's like, if somebody throws the bar at you, it's like, please, this is baby weight, you know? But at a certain point it was really hard. And it's like, if I experienced the reality of the risen Jesus, how many things would just be baby weight, light work, as they say, you know, like, I just want to experience it. I want, like in Luke chapter 24, Jesus broke the bread at dinner and then he disappeared and they recognized it was him. And Mary, he called her name, and it was the way he said her name, and boom, she recognized that it was him. And it's, I found myself like praying, like, break some bread, call my name, make it personal. Like, let me experience it more today. Help me to believe it more today. I want to know what I would be like. I was just thinking about the fact that when you go to Young Life Camp, and if Austin White and Tom Wicklund are doing program, they power their whole weekend on doing all their skits and everything on Red Bull. They call it Riding Bull.
Yeah.
I think it's zero sugar Red Bull, which I don't know how that works.
So gross.
It's like, we're going to take out sugar, but we're going to add more chemicals that make it sweet.
Yeah. and Smoke Wicklund will drink like four before he goes on stage. And it's like, how would certain things in my life be turned up if I was like, quote unquote, riding the bull of like just really believing and experiencing Jesus risen right here with me all day long?
Yeah, I think that's cool. I have like a follow up question. And how would you, like, in your life when you're doing that well, what does that look like?
Well, I think it, one thing it looks like for me is I'm more lighthearted. Like things are funny rather than scary. Things are more enjoyable. I laugh more and I look forward to more, and I have more energy and capacity for things that otherwise are overwhelming.
Okay. So are all those, like, I'm sorry, this has turned into interrogation of Lee.
Carry on, dude.
But it's helpful for me. So are all those are results of experience Jesus, experiencing the risen Jesus. Like,
yeah.
What does it look like for you to say, like, to experience through. Does that make sense, what I'm
like,
trying to say?
How do you do it?
Yeah, acknowledgement or whatever that looks like.
I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm, I feel like that's the thing. I feel like I hung the whole thing around his neck, in the sense of like, I was like, all right, in the village of Emmaus, like at dinner you broke the bread, and then there was something about the way Jesus broke bread before supper or something where they were like, oh, it's you. Like, and so I'm like, okay, do the thing. Like break the bread in such a way that I recognize, like, oh, it's true. You're here. You're alive. Right. Or it's the way that Jesus said the word Mary, that like nobody said her name like that except him. And so as soon as he said it, she was like, oh, it's you. You're back. It's all true. Everything that you said about rising from the dead, like, wow, it really happened. And so part of that is like, whether or not this is my, like, avoidance of responsibility or something, like, I'm hanging it on his neck of like, all right, this is up to you. Like, break the bread, call my name. Like, make me unshakably aware today that you are risen from the dead and here, and make it intensely personal for me. When it comes down to my part of that, it feels like I don't know. I think part of it is like rehearsing what we believe, you know, like my girls just got through being in this big musical, and it was like, it had a lot of words in it. Like, it had a lot of lines, a lot of songs. The songs had a lot of words, and Nora had this binder that she carried around that had the whole script for the whole play. And she was just constantly carrying it around, 'cause she was constantly going through it, constantly memorizing lines and, you know, just constantly rehearsing. And I think that's part of it, is like a focus and rehearsing of like the things that I believe are true.
Hmm. I think that's cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to John 17.
Oh. Okay.
Yes.
Oklahoma.
What?
Omaha. It's Omaha. It's not Oklahoma.
Oh, gosh. So, that is such a mouthful. Go
if you had to say Oklahoma, but that is a football drill.
Omaha. It's only one less
syllable. It's only one more syllable, yeah.
Okay, anyways, John 17. What?
Is it? It's only one syllable different, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man.
How do we know when to clap on syllables? We all just agree. It's like the Arthur Spooner thing. 4827331.
Nobody's going to know what that means, but I know what it means.
Thank you.
Tom will know what it means.
Okay, so John 17. This chapter, I think, is so cool. I think it's one of the coolest things in the scriptures because we're getting a look into Jesus's prayer life, which I think is really awesome. I think it's a moment where I'm like, gosh, I'm grateful John was in that room because otherwise you don't get this. But whatever. I just think it's so cool. I mean, and the whole like, if you were to like kind of zoom out on it, you can Jesus like there's segments of this chapter where he's praying. He's in just like direct communion with the Lord, having conversation about himself and what he's about to do. And then he shifts over to pray for his disciples. And then he shifts over to pray for all believers, which is so cool. And there's a moment though, where he like, you listen, like anytime I read the part where he's praying about his disciples, I'm like, that is the kindest thing. It's so sweet. Yeah. It's so, the things he says, I'm like, man, that must've been so encouraging. And then the next verse, like, verse 20, after he is starting to transition into all believers, he says, my prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message. So it's like, also, let me throw an umbrella over you all for this. And it just it's sweet. And
that is so cool. It's like, there's a couple, I can think of a couple places in the Gospel of John where that exact thing happens, where all of a sudden it's like John, it's like a Ferris Bueller's Day Off moment where like he breaks the fourth wall and starts talking to the audience.
Yeah.
And Ferris Bueller does that a couple of times. Like when he says the thing about the Ferrari and after having driven it, he's like, it is so choice. I highly recommend you getting one if you have the means.
That's right.
You know, which is ridiculous. Nobody can buy a Ferrari, but like, but he says that to the audience and that's a little Ferris Bueller moment, but like,
I love it.
But, John kind of, he puts that in from this prayer of like, I pray for everybody that is going to believe in me through their message. And then there's that place later when Thomas wants to like, I want to see the nail marks in his hands and the spear mark in his side or whatever. And Jesus is like, blessed are all those who have not seen and yet believe. And you're like, oh, I'm there. There I am again.
Right.
It's like, there I am in chapter 17. There I am later in chapter 20, you know?
So I'm going to read verse 24. No, it's okay. Verse 24 on.
Oh, did you just... Thomas just handed me... He's like, fine, if you don't want me to share, then I'll just... is that what you were going to say?
No.
Oh, good.
No. Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you, and they know that you have sent me. I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known in order that the love you have for me may be in them and that I myself may be in them. The like, there's so much levels of coolness for this whole chapter. Like, one, you get the like... You get the snapshot of Jesus praying. So like, if you're ever in a place where you're like, I don't really know how to pray, like it's really cool, I think, to read this whole chapter and zoom out and say like, okay, how does Jesus talk to God? It's like, you know, it's on a friendship level, but he is also super respectful of him, which I think is really cool. And he just, but like, I made this jump the other day where I realized like, if you put this, any part of this in quotes and said Jesus was, this was a sermon he was giving, or this is a conversation he had one-on-one with Nicodemus or whoever it was, it would be like, oh, it, there's not really a difference, which I think is really cool. You get to see the like, you get to see the friendship that they have and the relationship they have and the respect that Jesus has. Like, it's all really cool. Two, there's a, you just, the idea that Jesus is praying for us, I think is just mind blowing and so encouraging. But three, if you really look at it and you think about what he's praying about and what he's saying to the Lord, it, just the idea that like Jesus is saying, hey, I want these people to be with me. Like, I want them in heaven. Like, I want this to happen. I'm like, and this is right before what's about to happen to him. Like, this is right before it. This thing, chapter 17 starts off with Jesus saying like his hour has come. And that's in response to a couple times in the Gospel of John where he's said, it's not yet my turn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's
like,
right.
It's really cool. But the time has come for this to happen finally. Like, the time has come for him to fulfill what the Lord has put him on earth to do, and or what he has come to earth to do. And I think it's so cool that like, it's not, you get to see his heart in that. Like,
yeah,
it, you get to see like, okay, here was the mission. Here is what you came to do. You've acknowledged that. Like, the start of this, he acknowledges saying like, I've done your will. I've done what you put me on earth to do. And now it's time. It's time to go to glory. And you get to see that even in that, even in staring down the barrel of a terrible night and a terrible death,
yeah,
he's saying like, I like, here's what I want. Like, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am, to see my glory. And you're like, there's only one way this is going to happen. And it's up to you, and you're about to do it. And I think it's so cool that even in this moment, even in knowing what's about to happen, he's sharing his heart for his people. And that's me, which is an awesome thing. And it's all believers. I just felt super encouraged in reading this over the past week. And I don't know, it felt like a hug.
Mm. I love that you said hug, because for me, like, everything you just said just like gassed me up. It's like a hug is just like such a sweet, soft, warm thing, but like at the exact same time it felt like a locker room speech for the championship game that you already know you're going to win. Like, there's some teams that like they go into a championship game like, and yeah, it's a championship game, but like, we are going to stomp this other team. It's over.
Right.
Like, when I was in the sixth grade, the high school team in this town that my dad coached won the state championship, and the hardest game was the semifinal, the state semifinal. The state game, they had so much confidence and swagger. Like, they were like, and they won the state championship 30-0. And it was like, there was never a question. There was never a hard series.
Was the semifinal game the Todd Helton game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Against Knox Central. But the state final game against Gallatin, it was just, they just stomped them. And they walked out of the locker room knowing like, okay, it's over. Let's go take it.
Right.
You know? And that's the way you're making me feel, is just like this gas up, like just gas me up. I hope that folks hearing this, like, in a way, it's like, grab a Red Bull and go do this day. Jesus is praying for you. He wants you to be with him. He accomplished everything, and it's like, it's on.
Yeah.
Don't grab a Red Bull. That's really bad for you.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I really like to indulge on energy drinks.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
You're so healthy otherwise. It's so weird.
That's what I'm saying.
Those are so bad for you.
I know, but yeah, I used to, like, in my old job, we would get samples of those things all the time, and I would just pound them. Like, let me clarify. I'd have one a day. That was my limit, and it was usually about 2 o'clock, which is just like, put me to bed, or I drink a Red Bull. But yeah, Maddie doesn't like it when I drink energy drinks.
No, I don't like it either. I don't like, my oldest daughter does that, and I'm like, no, don't do that, don't do that.
She drink Bangs.
I don't know what they are. I don't know what they are. I'm just like, no, don't tell me about it. At least now that you're 18, just don't tell me that you're putting that stuff inside you. It's so gross. Oh gosh. But ride the bull of the resurrection of Jesus and his love for you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Ride it.
Yeah. I'm Lee.
I'm Thomas.
Thanks for joining us, guys. This has been Ancient and New.
An empty grave, and eternal.